Conversation. You are close at hand to answer questions. That would be great, and we'll get started in just a couple of minutes. This is the Vertical Integration Working Group public forum. For those of you who are dialed in remotely, you are indeed in the right place. The JNSL Council open meeting ran just a little bit long, so we're sort of turning over the room, and we'll be with you shortly. All right, I think we'll get started. It doesn't look like many people are coming into the room. Welcome to all of you. Again, this is the public forum for the Vertical Integration Working Group, and I'm delighted to see so many of the working group members here. What we'll do is we'll walk through just a very brief introduction. I apologize, but we're not going to go through the whole history of vertical integration, nor are we going to give you a tutorial on the issue. We're assuming that most of you have been following this for quite some time and are familiar with the background, and we'd be happy if we leave you confused at the end to circle back around and fill in the gaps. But what the primary objective of this meeting today is to give you just a brief update, mostly on where we're at as a working group, and then zero in on the key issues that have emerged over the last 3 months, with which we call ATOMs. We'll explain that in a minute, and we'll listen to your views then for most of the time. Our thought is that we'll spend no more than 10 or 15 minutes talking at you, and then spend the rest of the time listening to you, since that's the primary objective of the meeting today. Before I go on into the rest of the slides, let me introduce a few people. My name is Mikey O'Connor. I am the junior co-chair of the Vertical Integration Working Group. My senior co-chair is Roberto Gaetano, my man on the saxophone last night, for those of you who are at music night. And if folks in the working group could just stand, I know there are a bunch of you in the room, stand or wave your hands or do something cool, and let's the rest of us give them a hand, because this is one of the hardest working groups on the planet. Just a brief outline of the process that we've been going through. The work group was really formally launched right after the Nairobi meeting, and because of the item 6 of our charter is not to delay the launch of new GTLDs, we've been operating on a much faster schedule than most working groups operate on, and I'm happy to report that we are a tiny bit late, but not terribly late, and we still are pretty confident that we can meet that objective. But we are hitting all of the bases incredibly fast. And our thought when we originally structured the work is that we would do a very fast first PDP. That's the one we're in now, and as you can see in the sort of yellowish part, we're about midpoint on that. This is the halfway point in which we've got an emerging sense of where we're going. We want to describe that to you and get your feedback on it. And then that last half, which looks like a half, has actually been further compressed, because our new goal is really to have everything wrapped up in time for the board retreat in September, which cuts a couple of months out of our schedule. So I said in the earlier update that VI time is to internet time what internet time is to regular time, and I think we're going to have to put another category in there because we're going to be moving really fast. Just a couple of highlights to sort of brag about what the working group has been doing. I started to allude to this. Normally, this process takes 400 to 500 days, and in some cases, up to 11 years with the case of the Who Is study stuff. We're doing this in now considerably less than 180 days, so we will be setting a land speed record with this. We are also a pretty large group of people. We don't really have 70 active members. We have probably 30 to 35 really active members, but even that is a very large working group. We meet, we've been meeting twice a week for the last month, so it's a busy time. I think we started with about 12 proposals. We've winnowed that down considerably, and my BlackBerry is going off all the time on my hip, so I can't really tell you how many proposals we've got at the moment because it's quite fluid this week. The opportunity to meet each other face-to-face, talk these things through, refine positions, reach understandings has been tremendous, and we've made huge progress in the last few days. Another little landmark, I've been on several of the recent PDPs, and just to give you a sense of it, they typically generate about 500 emails during the course of the PDP, which is usually a year and a half or so. This one has generated 2,000 emails in 3 months, which raises an interesting issue. One of the problems with that many very tightly worded emails is that we tend to lose people whose language is not English, because now that's a pretty considerable burden to bear. And that's one for the working group restructuring folks to think about. But it has been a very busy time. Let me get quickly to the meat. Basically, what we've both Roberto and I come from, in one way or another, a chemical background. And so we've been using the analogy that our proposals are molecules, and that those proposals are comprised of atoms. And the atoms are the most contentious, the sort of key dimensions of the puzzle that we're trying to solve. And that list up on the wall is the list of atoms that we've really focused in on this week in Brussels. And so I'm going to take just a second to sort of step through those. And I'm going to skip the first one because the first one is sort of, in a way, the punchline. Clearly, the issue that we're really addressing is the degree to which registries and registrars can control each other and the percentage of ownership that can exist between those two kinds of entities going forward. That's at the heart of the issue that we're discussing. But several other dimensions have emerged as very important, one of which is, do these rules, whatever we come up with, apply only within the relationship as it pertains to a single TLD, or does it pertain to the relationship across all of the TLDs that are either sold or hosted by the entities? That scope issue, as you'll hear in a minute, there are two quite different points of view on that. Another sort of scope of rules question is whether or not to include registry service providers and resellers in the rules that are made. And as this conversation proceeds, I think you'll find that there's also a considerable conversation to be had about that. Another issue that we've been wrestling with is really, if once these rules have been arrived at, should there be some exceptions to those rules? There are a variety of exceptions, but one of the exceptions that we've talked about a lot is the exception for what we call a single registrant TLD, which is, say, an organization that wants to use the top-level domain either exclusively within the organization or between the organization and its either customers or clients or affiliates or associates. And we make the distinction in the working group between single registrant, single user, which is the internal idea, and single registrant, multiple user, TLDs. Eric periodically asks us a question, do we have in our scope the mandate to discuss this kind of thing? And it took me several iterations to really understand Eric's question, and now finally I can give him an answer. I think the answer is yes. I think that to the extent that it bears on this issue, everything that bears on this issue is in our mandate, and we'll do it. I think that's it. The final point on there is whether what we ought to do is essentially put forth an interim solution that can then run for a while, and then that the community and the council revisits in some period of time, 18 months, 3 years, and so on. So these are discussions and issues that we've been talking about a lot in the last 3 months. And what has emerged and is the last one, and it's the first one on the list, is the whole question of enforcement and compliance. And the reason I left that for last is because, in a way, a lot of our conversation can be described as polarized, in the polarized filter sense. Some people are vertically polarized, some people are horizontally polarized, in that some people believe that ICANN can do the compliance and enforcement that's required, and thus that gives them more flexibility in terms of what they propose, whereas other people do not. And as a result, they propose different things. And so as that emerged, that turned out to be sort of the issue or the topic that allowed the group to get sort of out of the deadlock oppositional mode and push things sideways just a little bit, because there's pretty substantial agreement that compliance and enforcement is going to be an important component of whatever the group proposes. And that it's helped move our conversations forward a lot this week. Now, you'll note that I've been very careful not to describe any of those proposals. And part of the reason is because, as a co-chair, throughout the 3 months, I've been very careful not to try as hard as I can not to express an opinion or a view about any of the proposals, and I hope I've been successful at that. But it's also because they're so fluid, and they're, you know, the state of the understanding is moving so rapidly. And I'm not sure that I can actually accurately represent the proposals as they stand today. So that's sort of my introductory comments. Roberto, would you like to follow up with anything that I've missed or screwed up?
I think you covered all. Maybe leave more time to the discussion and to the questions.
Yeah, that's really our primary objective today, is to hear from you, especially folks that aren't in the working group. I know that lots of people have been talking to lots of other people, and this is really the time that we would like to hear from you about what we're doing. So the mics are available, and you're welcome to approach them. We'll Margie, are you keeping an eye on the chat room and in the Adobe Connect room? So if there are questions that come up from there, maybe you can barge in and let us know about those too.
I will. I'll let you know if I see something.
Thanks a lot, Margie. I've done such a fabulous job of explaining it, or such an inadequate job of explaining it, that we have no questions at the moment. I don't really know what that means. So I'll leave it quiet for a bit, see if anybody wants to step up. Otherwise, we'll move forward. Go ahead. Can you state your name when you... they'll turn it on for you. It's on, and please state your name so that we can catch in the transcript. Go ahead.
Hi, Paul Foody. I'm speaking my own behalf.
Thanks, Paul.
Is it not fair to say that the more GTLDs you get, the more impossible vertical integration becomes?
Say more about that.
Well, if you end up with a root of a million names, as Harold Alvestrand was predicting in Seoul, given the nature of business today, the number of companies companies that they own, it's going to be impossible to maintain vertical integration.
Go ahead, Roberto.
I tend to disagree. I had the feeling that it was maybe the opposite, in the sense that let's take the extreme examples. Let's assume that we have effectively a million TLDs. Of course, there will be a large part of that million TLDs will have very few registration, and so it would probably not make a lot of sense to have all the registrars supporting all million TLDs. So at one point in time, you will have almost the need to have a different solution, a different business model for TLDs that have, I don't know, 100 registrations. But I don't see how, I really don't see how this impacts the work of the working group in the sense how the fact that we have 250 or 1,000 or a million TLDs impacts the position that we have to take on those, for instance, on the atoms that are behind us.
Well, this is a one-off decision. Once you take this decision, you're opening the floodgates. You can't undo it once you've made it. So you've got to look at the position as it will be, not in 2 years or 3 years' time, but in 5 or 10. And in 5 or 10 years' time, with a million TLDs, which will basically cover every single major corporation, it's impossible for me to believe that those corporations will not also own the registries that will be serving at least some of those TLDs.
I think I want to push back on the notion that you can't undo this, because essentially ICANN is a body that has relationships with entities through contracts, and those contracts can be modified. So I think it can be undone if it turns out something's gone wrong.
You really think that if 500 TLDs are sold off and people register secondary domains under those TLDs, that it's going to be workable, possible to rein them back in? I dread to think the legal costs that would involve. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Just to that last point, it is worth... Oh, sorry.
Yep.
And it's Jordan Buchanan. It is worth noting that, consensus policies do allow ICANN to amend these contracts anytime. So, I want to ask a question about compliance, which is, it seems to me that a big part of the concern about compliance concerns come from. It seems like, you know, with regards to many of these issues, specifically with regards to the ones about market power and so on, there's already forces outside of ICANN that have powers sort of beyond the contracts, you know, in terms of regulatory bodies and competition bodies within, you know, at the national level and at the EU level and so on. But in addition to that, has the working group considered at all giving third-party beneficiary status to, you know, for example, registrars or registrants, just for these just for some of the issues where there might be harm as a result of vertical integration, as opposed to relying on ICANN, allowing, you know, if registrars are harmed or if registrants are harmed by, you know, way of people using, you know, either market power or some other, you know, bad action that might happen as a result of vertical integration, you know, allowing enforcement to come, you know, through people using the courts as opposed to relying on ICANN to do it.
I'm gonna do my usual stupid thing and ask you to say that question another way, just to make sure I understand it.
So usually it is the case that all of the, in the past, all of the sort of fair treatment and so on provisions in the registry agreements with regards to how they treat registrars, for example, I believe all that's been in the registry agreement with ICANN as opposed to in the registry registrar agreement. So the registrar, if the registry is not treating them fairly, doesn't have any recourse but to go ask ICANN to fix it. So what if instead we just move that into the registrar agreement so that the registrar could, you know, go to the registry themselves and you know, use a court to make sure there was fair treatment?
As of today, unless I've missed one
but or... But I could be wrong because I see John Nevitt getting the microphone.
There's definitely been discussion on the working group list on that issue, and it's being considered.
My name is Robert Hall of Momentus from Canada. We are shareholders in one of the largest .ca registrars, and my concern is we've started to talk about registrars in terms of global or wide-ranging as opposed to registrars in a given TLD. So the current version of the DAG would prevent registrars, and you could read that to say I'm a .ca registrar, therefore I'm prevented from applying for an ICANN TLD. We're also an ICANN registrar, but we're not a registrar for all the ICANN TLDs. This working group's called vertical integration. What we're really talking about is the integration of a registrar in a given TLD or a given registry, but it seems to have been somehow opened up to, once you're a registrar at all, you can't own part of a registry. And I would encourage you to get back to the notion of there's no harm in owning a registry and a registrar that don't do business together. They're not integrated. They're not in a vertical market. I don't understand how we all of a sudden got onto the topic of they're all one, they're all the same. If you're a .ca registrar, you shouldn't own another TLD. And I'm sure my friend Jeff now is going to...
There are different opinions in the working group about this issue, and Jeff is expressing one of the opinions of the working group. Can you, Jeff?
I love standing next to Rob. It makes me feel short. I know I don't need Rob to do that. I think Rob's exactly right. That is one of the things we're talking about. And actually, the JN2 proposal that's out there is actually more in line with what Rob is talking about. But I just want to say, on the other side, it's not really new, because right now the ICANN agreements prevent a registry from being a registrar in any TLD. That's what they say right now. Again, not that I agree with that, and I'm actually more on your side, but what you're talking about. But the contracts right now...
Sorry. Yeah, that's okay. The ICANN agreements prevent you from being a registrar not in .ca, not in .de, or many of the TLDs out there. Just the ones under ICANN. And I think this is part of the problem, is we start lumping these things together. So there's nothing to stop Newstar from going out and being a .ca registrar whatsoever.
No one would have a problem with it.
So why do we have a problem now that we're going to create a whole new set of TLDs with saying, wait, some are different than others, and we ought to treat them differently? And I know country codes have sovereignty and whole issues around that, but I think we've got to get back to the fact of if I am not a registrar to a TLD, then I am not a registrar. in that TLD and shouldn't be considered one. So if the working group comes out with, I can't be a registrar at all in a TLD or 15% or whatever, fine. But if a working group comes out saying the registrars should not be a registrar in any TLD, that's where I start to have problems and think it's beyond your scope, frankly.
Rob, before you walk away, one of the questions that I want to ask, if I remember to everybody, is sort of a, I'm always trying to find shearing points where we can get out of the oppositional,
right.
You know, it's my way or the highway kind of thing. Is there anything that you can think of that's either between the two poles, you know, black or white? Is there a middle ground that we could think about? Or is there something that we could do to mitigate the bad effects of that?
Yes, and I think you're driving down towards them. So I think your debate about should a registry and registrar that's vertically integrated in the same TLD and selling each other's products, what should the limits be there? 0, 2, 15, 100? That should be what I think your debate is. If you're not a registry and a registrar in the same TLD, you're not vertically integrated at all. So I think maybe that's the middle ground, is if you started focusing on what the real issue is and what the real concerns are, which is when you have this integration within the same TLD, as opposed to saying, hey, he's a registrar for .ca, no, that shouldn't be allowed to own a different TLD. So then you've got lots of middle ground. You know, 2, 5, 10, 15, should it be control, not control? There's huge debates, I'm sure, in your group around what is that. But I urge you to take a step back and say, well, wait a minute, if there's not an issue, let's not try and capture the entire world and make it an issue. Let's deal with, you know, the middle grounds and finding that consensus on the issues we need to.
Don't go away. I've got another question for you.
Sure.
One of the things that, this gets back to this sort of lens that you look at it through. One of the concerns is the possible gaming that can take place hopping across sort of those boundaries in oblique ways. So that even though there's no direct connection between the registry and registrar because they're in different TLDs, either through affiliated companies or through essentially pairwise relationships between various pairs, if you will.
So do I take a registrar and go to my friend Adrian and have him set up a registrar and I become a reseller and effectively get the same thing?
Yeah.
You've got to stop it. So be very clear about your wording.
Right.
Right? If the prohibition is you cannot do this,
right,
then make sure staff word the document in such a way that you capture all those. I can tell you they've done a great job so far in the DAG of capturing related companies and control and shareholders and entities and your spouse. And I mean, they've gone pretty wide. So if you're I'm worried that I'm possibly hearing that you are scared to go there because you may not get it right and capture all the possible gaming.
Well, no,
you should be, you know, directing staff or whoever to say, look, this is our intent. If someone crosses that line, whack them.
Right.
So if you come out and say, you cannot do this, you know, that should be your clear statement. Let the lawyers figure out how to enforce it or how to write it in such a way that it can't be done. But you want to be the policy guys that say, this is the policy. This isn't done in any way, through any reseller, through any gaming, period. Fair?
Yeah. But hang on. Okay. I think Roberto's got a question for you.
We hear you. And this is one of the issues that are being debated in the working group. As I said in the beginning, there are different positions. Now, there are people in the working group that have the same position that you have, but there are also other people that are afraid of the gaming and that don't think that, for instance, the enforcement can be so easy. I think that what I'm trying to say is that I appreciate your contribution, but this is something that is currently being debated, and there are people on different sides on this. And the purpose of our work here in the working group is exactly to find a solution to this when you have people that have different approaches.
Fair enough, but that's a little perverse. If you're debating that you can't get to a policy that you want to get to because you're worried about how it might be drafted or enforced, that's a little nuts. Like, you're going to dilute your policy from what you want to, oh, we can only do this. What you ought to be doing is saying, this is the policy at a high level. No cross-ownership. I'm fine with that. 100% ownership. I don't care what it is. But narrow it to the vertical and then find a way to draft it or direct staff or lawyers to find a way to draft it. I wouldn't be so concerned. I know there's been, you know, everybody always stands up and tries to slow things down, if you will, with, oh, there might be gaming. Oh, there might be abuse of it. That's not your job. Your job is to figure out what's the best policy. I can't even figure out how to enforce it. They got some pretty smart people. I can't believe I just said that, but I did.
I don't want to. I don't want to turn this into a dialogue, a debate among ourselves. But let me just make an analogy. I have a software development background. That's actually my day job. This I'm doing for fun. when we develop software, that software then has to be deployed in a certain infrastructure, and we cannot just because we have some requirements from the customer develop software that is not going to be able to run on that infrastructure. So we need to talk about with the infrastructure people at the moment of the design, and we have to limit these things to what is actually implementable. Now, the good news is that we are now talking in the working group. We are involving the compliance people in ICANN exactly to see what is enforceable and what is enforceable with a level of difficulty that is too high for the benefit that we are going to have. So I think that what you are proposing is something that we are exploring. I cannot anticipate what the result will be. But we are taking this into account, and we are doing our best for having a fair solution.
Great, but I encourage you to come out with the policy you want first and then turn to them and say, any issues? I mean, they wrote a policy in the DAG 4 that's very narrow, very restrictive, and I'm sure they've got some way to enforce it. They wrote it brilliantly to capture everybody. You know, everybody's all upset about it, and no one's finding a way through it. Come out with the right policy, and they'll figure out how to implement it.
Rob, I think you've done a great job, and I just want to amplify something here, and that is this notion that sometimes you make policy because you don't think that the enforcement capability is actually there. When, as I think you point out correctly, you ought to make the right policy and then ensure that the enforcement capability is able to deliver on that. And I think that's part of the reason why in Rod's opening speech, in the little, you know how it is with the State of the Union speech, you get a little paragraph and you have to parse every single word. Well, enforcement showed up in that paragraph. And there's a very active debate going on right now here in Brussels to sort of figure out whether we can get that nailed down. Because I think that frees the group to not favor that weakness, but rather do the right thing. So there's a little summary for you. Go ahead.
My name is Nao Masumari. I'm from Japan. I want to give 2 points, and I want to keep my talk within 3 minutes. 1 point is the name of the working group or the PDP. I think there's two extreme sides. One is completely opposed to the integration, and the other is the complete freedom for the integration. So the name of the vertical integration, I really concerned that this name gives some kind of misconception that the ICANN is heading to the integration freedom. But it's not fair, I think. So the name should be more neutral than vertical integration and separation, like that. That is one point. Another point is I'm very, really cannot understand why a single registrant is listed as an atom here, because the single registrant TLD is some, I think it's a very policy, a big policy decision, which is not yet done in the final report of the new GTLD. So it's This is some kind of out of scope of this working group. The singularist and TLD should be treated in another policy making track, and I believe this atom should be excluded. That is another point. Thank you.
I think that there might be a misunderstanding here. The single registrant appears here as one and is immediately under exceptions, and the question is whether if we have a TLD that has a single registrant, that could be an exception to the general rule as it is today of separation, for which the integration will be easier or possible. So it's not a requirement for the vertical integration. It's just a special case that a lot of people in the working group have proposed as a case to be treated as an exception, so with a certain specific. In terms of the name, I agree with you, but I happen to, you know, it's like my last name. I have been given that at birth, and I have to live with that, even if it does not fully represent what my personality. No, but besides the joke, I think that it might be possible to change the name, but it might at this point in time do more harm than benefit, in the sense that it might become confusing if we change it. But we can take this suggestion into account and see if we can do something.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Who, me?
Yeah, I think. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, you go first, then you. Nobody in the queue from the chat, right? Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to have to watch both sides of the room. Go ahead.
Sorry, if you're pointing to me, perhaps you said that, because I don't see your hands.
I'm sorry, I am pointing to you.
Is that me,
you.
Sorry?
That's you.
Yeah,
the one and only Amadeu Abrilli Abril.
By the way, Roberto, I have good news for you. This Italian civil law allows you to change your family name. As a matter of fact, I did that. I changed the order of my two family names. They haven't discovered until the end that it was Abril and Abril, which was quite ridiculous, but you know, they were forced to accept that. I was young, had plenty of time. There was no working group on vertical integration at that time. I just wanted to answer a couple, you know, make a couple of points on what Rob has said, one on policy and enforcement, the other one on why, you know, doing anything else that, you know, when registry is not the same, I mean, when a registrar is owned by a registry but it's not working in that concrete registry, but another one where the registry is different, why should we care? We shouldn't, provided two things. The first one is absence of market power. Okay, we all agree that in absence of market power, vertical integration is not that dangerous, but we need some measures there. So everybody would agree, provided that neither the registry or the registrar have market power. That could be across all GTLDs, or that could be registry specific. Let me give you a concrete example. In .cat, a very small TLD with 41,000 domain name registrations, there's a registrar, Nominalia, that has over 40% of the registrations. And they had over 50% at a certain point. Now, does Nominalia have market power in global terms? No. But it has a clear market power in terms of .cat. Now, let's imagine that Nominalia wants to become the registry for .asia. No problem. Now let's imagine that Nominali wants to become the registry for .bcn, the proposed city TLD for Barcelona, which is probably more in a closer defined market with .cat. That would be a problem, because being the registry of a TLD that's partially competing with .cat, they would be able at the same time being the dominant registrar to influence anything that .cat would like doing and to force them to align to their registry.bcn. This is not a real case. I'm just explaining you what could happen. So, yes, provided that. It doesn't mean that nominale could not be, but we need some safeguards, and we don't need to discuss the safeguards now. So, yes, but. The second but is provided this is true, which means provided that the registrar does not use a hidden reseller, etc. And then we go to the question of compliance. Now, should we care about compliance or enforcement or not? Yes, to a certain point. When you design laws, you want three things. I mean, let's imagine that we are discussing how to reduce the cost of accidents. We want to limit the accidents and the cost of them. So the first thing is you want rules that, you know, limit the number of accidents and how important and less if to the individuals they are and to the society. So we put the speed limits, etc. There's a secondary cost. We don't want to prevent good and, you know, valuable social behavior. We could say we forbid cars. We could say maximum speed limit is 1 mile per hour, half a kilometer per hour. It would be much less accidents, but probably would cost more social costs that we are trying to prevent. The third one that very often we forget is the cost of administering the system. If we said that each car would have the driver and the policeman controlling the speed, and then there would be another policeman each 200 meters controlling the same speed to put the fines, probably would have much less accidents. But then would have some cost that socially we could not bear at all. So it's not that we need to design all the enforcement mechanisms. We don't need to measure all of them, but we need to design a policy that takes into account that the cost of administering such policy is at least feasible.
Thanks, Amadeo.
Mikey, I have some questions from the chat, if that's all right.
Let's go to this fellow first, since he's been so patient because I forgot to look that way. So that's we'll do the chat ones next.
Hi, my name is Yoav Keren. I am the CEO of Domain the Net. We are an ICANN accredited registrar from Israel. And I wanted to raise, a specific issue that we have. And I assume that's not the only case of specific problems that other companies may have. We've been active as an ICANN accredited, as a registrar for about 10 years, and ICANN accredited a little less. And at the same time, we were very active in the IDN field. We're one of the companies that in this ICANN community has been pushing for IDNs for many years. We took part in most of the IDN working groups. And in our community, we were also promoting IDNs for many years. Our intention was always to become an IDN registry at some point, or to have a separate entity affiliated to be an IDN registry. Right now, as it seems, we won't be able at any way to do that. So what this policy is going to do is actually penalize us either for being an ICANN accredited registrar or for being active as an IDN promoter. Why? And my assumption is that we're not the only specific case like that. There are some other actors in the field, in the IDN field specifically, but in other specific communities also. And I think these parties should not be penalized for investing money and their time and efforts for many years for pushing for having the communities get a solution. At the end, we won't be able to implement it. So my first suggestion is, as you consider exceptions like one registrant, a single registrant exception, is to consider also exceptions on specific cases of, you can call it public interest or specific markets or IDNs that it might be relevant to allow a more vertical integration. Now, I want to speak on this issue in general to bring my own opinion or our company's opinion. And so generally, I really support what Rob said. I think, and that could be also a solution. Even in these specific cases, that can be a solution. We have no problem in being a registry and preventing from our registrar to sell that domain name. And actually, I heard there's you said you're worried from the gaming issues. So I saw the wording in the fourth guidebook, and there, as you said, they were very specific of what are affiliates and shareholders and everything. So restrict the sale. If you are a registry, you cannot sell through any affiliates with the same wording you have right now. So you are allowed to be a registrar and to have shares at a certain level in the registry, but you're not allowed to have any to sell that in your registrar or sell it through any of your affiliates. That solves the problem. Now, we need to be practical here because at the end, usually when you restrict in the world, in the world of economics, when you use a regulatory policy to restrict shareholding, it's usually to prevent monopoly power or prevent from, in some markets that you have only a small number of players, for example, if it's a mobile market, you have two or three players. So then you have some restrictions, maybe on internet connection. You have all kinds of on restrictions. But in most cases, I'm taking, for example, the Israeli market, that since it's a small market in many of, like, the mobile or the internet, you have only a few members, only two or three companies that practically have the entire market, 99% of the market. And there are restrictions on ownership, but it's allowed in certain restrictions. So it's not forbidden totally. It's allowed. You just make sure it's different entities, you cannot cross-sell, all these restrictions that you can put in. So as Rob said, we need to decide on a policy that is the right policy and to implement it. Now, I also heard something about ICANN is going to have a problem to enforce it. I heard different numbers being thrown in the air, 250 application, 500 application. I'm just putting out the numbers. That's going to be $40, $50, $60, $90 million. That's enough money for enforcement. So people, let's do something that will encourage competition. This is what one of the basics for ICANN. To encourage competition, to allow a better service to the end users, and I'm okay. We should have restrictions. That's okay. Don't let market powers to have their own way and restrict where we can. But we should find a solution that is reasonable and that it's really considers specific cases that are different than the regular ASCII TLD that anyone wants to go after. That's it.
Thanks very much. One of the things that this is an inside joke with the working group, but I do like to do the sense of the group a lot. And I'd just like a show of hands from the room that, and I have to kind of compose this question on the fly, that capable, effective contract compliance and enforcement is a key enabler of a good policy. I just want to see if that's true. And how many don't think that? Yeah, that's what I thought. Thanks.
Mikey, I have a question from the chat.
Go ahead.
This is from Volker Ryman. He says, many of us believe that the rules against gaming will need enforcement, and ICANN tends to underfund and understaff the compliance team. As ICANN has large savings regarding gathering interest in the bank, do you agree that ICANN should take 5 to 10% of these funds to finally build an effective enforcement team?
Let's put that question to the group the same way. I'm not going to answer that. I'm just the co-chair. I don't have any opinions about anything. But, Margie, why don't you go ahead and reread the question, and we'll let people raise their hands around it.
Okay. Many of us believe that the rules against gaming will need enforcement, and ICANN tends to underfund and understaff the compliance team. As ICANN has large savings gathering interest in the bank, do you agree that ICANN should take 5 to 10% of these funds to finally build an effective enforcement team?
A few hands, but not quite so universal. And I think, by the way, really wish you could be here, Volker. I would think that one of the things that we would probably want to defer is the specific amount and the strategy and the approach. I think this is back to Rob's point, which is we want to set the direction and then let the powers that be at ICANN sort of figure out how to deliver what we need. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Paul Foody again. To try and illustrate what I was saying before, when you've got a million TLDs, every company that has a web presence that's worth more than, I know, $1 million is going to want their own TLD. At that stage, every registrar is going to have their own TLD, by which time they become registries. So we're debating something which really is a short-term debate. It's a question. What it's doing is it's you're putting off the inevitable. We're talking about a policy which, when the inevitable happens, will be completely impossible to maintain. Thank you.
Thanks for the clarification. I'll go to you.
And Mikey, I have additional questions if you come back to me after these.
Okay, so we'll just put you in the rotation from now on, Margie. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just keep going every time.
Okay.
Thank you. sorry, my name is Oscar Robles. I am the registry for the .mx CCTLD. I just want to make two comments. One is that in some countries or some markets, they don't do policies to avoid market power, but to avoid bad practices or abuse of those of that market power. And I haven't heard anything about bad practices after the market power. So I would like to start into the real problem or the real dangers of this market power, because market power is not the problem. We have seen it with the community-based TLDs. And the second comment is that we have to be careful because I'm concerned that some of these ideas are directed. They have a special dedication for some specific players. But we have to be careful because those specific players are the most powerful players that will be avoiding that eventual policy. And eventually that policy will affect the small players, not the one that it's supposed to be binding by this dedicated policy. That's maybe my perception, but I want to let you know. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that. Certainly the bad practices conversation is active and ongoing in the working group. And your other point is also well understood, and there's a lot of conversation about that in the 2,000 emails, for sure. Margie?
Okay, the next one comes from GPM Group, and the question is, large brands often use a specialist registrar like Mark Monitor to manage their second-level domain registrations. Given that running their own registry is likely to be a more specialist activity than running their own registrar, and therefore likely to be outsourced to a specialist registry company, is there any need for special consideration of vertical integration exceptions for single registrant brands?
I think that the answer to that is that the single registrant, we've sort of generalized the .brand TLD to the single registrant blob, that .brand would be in that blob, and that we've split the conversation in two. There's the single registrant, single user blob, which is where a company, a brand, for example, would have essentially complete control over all of the second-level domains in the top-level domain. And then there's the brand TLD that would be giving out domains to either customers or business partners or someone over whom they do not control the content of the web page, the email, et cetera. And we're actively exploring both of those. It's certainly in the conversation. And again, I'm not going to call the horse race, but I want to reassure the person that we have talked a lot about that and continue to talk a lot about it. The one and only JC, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Jean-Christophe Vin from EuroDNS. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing today. I would like to talk about numbers, fears, and enforcement. I represent a proposal that we co-signed with Volcker, Indom, and Black Knight, where we proposed 100% as the magic number for integration. It was not a joke. It was meant to convey the fact that, as European, we know of several cases where there is actual full integration between the registry and the registrar, because some European registries are happy to sell their names and still have a more than vibrant market. So we didn't know why the magic number should be 0, 2, 15, or even 100. We are not into numbers. I'm a lawyer, so I'm better with words than with numbers. The point we made was that to this day, the only answer we got from the community about the magic number and what it should be reduced from potential 100 to a couple of points or 15 was, as you said, gaming. Well, gaming is a risk, but the internet, I mean, the risk is inherent to what we do. The broad point in my mind is, do we want to avoid all risk, or do we want to contain the risk and make, well, bad actors responsible for the risk they make, you know, the community takes because of us? And to me, the debate shouldn't be about a magic number, but a magic word. The word is compliance. We need, if there is such a fear of gaming, if there is such a risk for the community, we need to make sure bad actors are found, apprehended, stopped, whatever, and others should be free to help their customers as they always have been. The question that was put forward before was, we are used to use specific registrars for our needs. Shouldn't we be able to do so with new GTLDs? It is a very valid point, one that we've been hearing more and more from customers and in those hallways this week. You know, as registrars, we know about the complexity of the DNS and of the naming system. At the moment, the way DAC 4 is written, I have to politely but firmly tell to my customers, sorry, I cannot talk to you right now, because if we do so, we are endangering your proposal. So we are faced with the bizarre situation where our customers who trusted us for years, of which we've managed the brands and helped them with understand the process and make the most of it, at the time when they could make even more with the internet, we have to tell them to go away. DAC 4 put us into a corner, and Rod and Peter had made no mistake of saying, we pretty much did that to light a fire under you so you find a solution. I propose politely again that we sort of do the same. I can, as the answer is a better compliance. Let's put them into some kind of corner.
Thanks, JC. Philip.
Thank you. That's Philip Shepherd speaking on behalf of the business constituency and addressing a couple of points that are in our published position, which I believe we have made available to your group. I mean, our starting point, of course, is different to many others that you're being hearing from, who are basically jockeying for position in terms of their own private interest and what might enhance their own business models in the future. As commercial users of the system, we look at it, of course, in terms of what is going to make a better and robust system. so much closer to what might be described as the broad public interest. And here, I think, in particular, our concern is to avoid the externalities of the system falling upon those who are of the way that we have awarded domain names and her lack of compliance in terms of certain agreements. And the cost of those falls on others to police and to provide. So it's driven by those same concerns that we start to look at this. And for us, when we started looking at the reasons why vertical separation happened in the first place, it all got round to essentially competition law and to dominance and to the exercise of dominance within a market. And if I might just read a couple of pieces from the paper, I think we finally posed the question to ourselves, saying the following: will removing the vertical separation safeguards either increase or decrease the likelihood of the exercise of dominance within the domain name marketplace? So we thought that was really the key question that we are asking ourselves. And in considering it, and we'd heard and we'd had indeed presentations ourselves from both sides of the argument, we felt that essentially it got down to a couple of things we put in our recommendations. The first of is the following. We believe that removing the existing vertical separation safeguards may, important word, may increase the likelihood of the exercise of dominance with the domain name marketplace. But balanced against that, of course, is even if that might happen, are there other benefits that might accrue? And so far, when we looked at this earlier, when we wrote this paper a few months ago, and even up to date in the arguments so far, it still, I think, is the case that our second recommendation has not really changed. And that second recommendation is the following. The BC believes the proponents of change have not satisfactorily demonstrated the likelihood of marketplace benefit to users. And for us, that is exactly the juxtaposition that we're in and the way that we should be judging all of this. You know, might the change lead to increased dominance in the market? Likely to be a bad thing. And even if that is the case, is it made clear to us what the likelihood of marketplace benefit is? And both of these are likelihoods. Eh? We're talking about future scenarios, so it's difficult to have. And I think really we would very much like to see debate centered around that. Because as a BC, if we're hearing such changes in general would lead to the likelihood of great benefit and that we may balance against a likelihood of dominance, we'll probably be very happy to say we'd like to look at that, we believe that, we buy into that, we go to it. But to date, the case ain't being made. Thank you.
Thanks, Philip. One of the things that you saw on the very first, one of the first slides, was the difference between the really short PDP that we're in right now and the much longer one that follows it. And one of the issues that we had to grapple with was how much essentially research we could conduct in the amount of time that we've got. And some of the issues that you're raising are ones that, in order to really generate the case, the facts that underpin it, will probably take longer than we have in terms of meeting the deadlines that we're in terms of DAG 4. And so, I'm sorry to have let you walk all the way back there, Philip, but if you're willing to walk back to the mic, is there sort of a level of rigor that you'd be willing to accept in terms of an interim amount of research, an interim case? And I'm sort of putting you on the spot here, and maybe it's unfair, but one of the things that would be really helpful is to get sort of a picture of what would be an acceptable case. What would it look like, so that we could see if we could, either develop it or develop a proxy for it or something like that. If you can help me out with that in any way, that'd be
okay,
great.
I can now provide you with some individual thoughts, because clearly this hasn't been a constituency question yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it actually goes back a little bit to a conversation you had earlier on compliance issues. And whereas what we heard was true in that you make the policy, hey guys, let's make the policy and we make sure compliance is right, sounds great. But what we know about compliance so far with respect to the RAA is that compliance isn't right. And the compliance is underfunded dramatically, understaffed dramatically within ICANN. So I think a condition for success that we as a BC would look at would be not only ensuring that the compliance team necessary for the RAA is right, but the compliance team necessary for any changes that we may be talking about here is also right, in place and recruited before there's any change. I suspect that is where the BC would wish to be, and probably that would mean a doubling, trebling or so of the existing ICANN compliance team. So it's applying money and personnel to that department to ensure that they walk the talk. I think that will probably be a condition of success.
Let me ask you one follow-up question before you go. We're under unbelievable deadlines. Basically, we're going to have to come up with an interim report that we can go out to public comment on literally within weeks. And I'm wondering if there's no way that we can arrive at that place in that kind of time. Is there some way that assurances could be gotten from someone, thumbprints on some piece of paper, shackled to a chair, I don't know, that would raise the level of confidence? The dilemma is that the path is clear, but the time frames are pretty rough. Any ideas on that?
Well, I mean, to some extent, you're asking the wrong guy, of course. You should be asking those who control the budgets.
I know, but you're handier.
To give us those assurances.
Well, but, my own
feeling would be that I would like to know those assurances are well down the path before we make change. But I reiterate what we said in the BC statement. We do not believe the case has yet been satisfactorily made for change, with the exception of what I think you've already discussed, which is the single registrant, where clearly there is a different case in terms of competitive nature of the market and dominance, and therefore those arguments don't apply, so the benefit seems pretty clear. So I think our view is, the case ain't been made yet, and therefore let us not make change at this point, but we are open to persuasion. And if the community said that, I think that's fine, And hey, if in the short period in front of you the case is made now more eloquently with less self-interest than has been made up to now, I'm sure the community will listen.
So what if I am now inventing things. No, I won't. Roberto is correct. I should stop talking and we should go to Margie. You're done?
Yeah, I don't have any more right now.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Joe Cady from SUG Interactive.
Awesome guitar player, by the way. Totally amazing guitar player.
I cannot deny it.
yes.
Okay. What I was going to say was, the comment I was going to make, I'm still going to make it, is perhaps rather simplified way of looking at the last two comments, being that I was looking at the chart of atoms, and I was thinking that perhaps one other atom that could go on would be the perception of risk, which is closely tied to enforcement and compliance, I suppose. But there seem to be varying perceptions of what the risks are, and yet another factor involved is what are the different perceptions of what will be the effect overall of the new GTLD program in the markets and the ecosystems and the relationships between all the players in the game. And the risks seem to go in two different directions. One is, what are the risks of vertical integration, and what are the risks of not having vertical integration, which seems to be diminished in the arguments, it seems, because people don't really, I don't hear so much anyway on what would be the impact on the market, on the effect and the success or failure of the new GLTLD program if we preserve vertical integration, because it is, in a sense, contrary to the justifications for having launched or planning to launch the program in the first place. And so if we could perhaps in the arguments that we could, there, here is yet another polarity in the question of polarity. So,
to reassure you, we do have a fair amount of documentation of that. We just haven't rattled it all off. And, you know, this is, again, this conflict between the need to move really fast and the need to have deep studies and understanding to back it up. Go ahead.
Anthony Vancouvering, Minds and Machines. I just want to make a general point that we need to distinguish between risks and fears. There are a lot of fears parading as risks, and I would also like to make the point that everyone who is speaking, almost without exception, is self-interested, and it serves no purpose to point to one party as self-interested and another as not. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. We're getting pretty close to the end. I think if so, we'll take these two folks, and then we're done. And you go first.
So, if it's really just two more people, I've already spoken, so I'll cede the microphone to the guy behind.
Well, in that case, let Steve go, and then you can be last. You'll get last word.
Thanks, Mikey. Steve Del Bianco. I'm a member of the business constituency, but speaking here for NetChoice, the group for which I'm the executive director. And one of the atoms on the list is single registrant, and atoms are the building blocks of great things. And that atom deserves a little bit of life, but that atom won't go anywhere unless it preserves the flexibility for a single registrant, a brand, or an entity that wants to give second-level domains or allocate second-level domains to not just employees and suppliers, but think about customers for an ISP, or think about registered users. Would Facebook want to give a second-level domain to me as a Facebook user? Maybe. But they're not going to want to be held to using all registrars to do that. They may want to do it entirely in-house. They may want to do it with a single registrar. They may want to do it with a wholly owned subsidiary that's a registrar, in which case they need 100% ownership and no other use. So that's an atom that isn't paid much attention to. It is a place where a lot of innovation potentially could occur, but it probably will not begin if we have the restrictions that they use all registrars, especially when it comes to marketing support. All right? Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Ohigashi, coming from Yokohama, Japan, and I'm working for the GMO Registry. And I would like to express my concern about registrar and registrar separation. And I know there have been a lot of talks from people in Japan who wants to apply for CDTLDs and brand TLDs. And of course, many of people here have seen the announcement from Canon. They want to apply for that Canon. And problem we have here is like if you want to have a separation between the registrar and registrar, and they would have no one to talk to in Japan because there is no company who is doing only registry business, and there are like several companies who wants to do registry business, but they are all from a registrar. And I think if you implement that separation between the registrar and registrar, you will lose like five or six applicants from Japan. Or I think a lot of countries from Asia, like China or Malaysia, I think they're in the same situation. Most of people, we have very small number of players in domain name industry, and most of their good people are like registrars. And if you, I think it's not fair to separate registrar and registrar to in people in Asia, we would not have enough number of applicants from our countries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for coming.
Since there's one more minute, can I actually make my brief comment after all?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. So I,
in that same vein, I just wanted to point out that when you're looking at the potential benefits of on both sides of these things, one of the things to keep in mind is that there may be benefits to the success of the GTLD program and the launch of these GTLDs, these new GTLDs as a whole. Now, some people disagree with that, but on balance, the ICANN community has decided that making these new GTLDs, you know, the world needs more TLDs, and rolling these out is beneficial. So I think there's ample evidence if you look back at existing smaller TLDs that have launched, all of them have said that their success has often been hampered in the past by some of the existing vertical integration restrictions, and so we shouldn't just assume that because those rules exist and because there's not, you know, benefits outside of the success or failure of these TLDs themselves. It's not just self-interest. It's that these TLDs being successful is a benefit in its own right.
Thank you very much for those last words. That wraps us up. Thanks for coming. We're going back to work.